Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. And we're going to start today's talker with a little story.
It begins with a kid named Eldrick. He had athletic talent and a lot of it. Even before he became a teenager, people knew this young man was something exceptional. And they were right. Everything he entered, he won.
And it wasn't just his physical abilities that made him so remarkable. Eldrick had an uncanny ability to focus. He was disciplined. He practiced endlessly. And early on, he devoted his life's work to winning tournaments that were years away. And when he competed, he had a fearsome, faraway look in his eyes. Discipline, focus, and control defined his character.
Eldrick became one of the most successful and admired athletes of all time. But then, seemingly out of the blue, came explosive revelations of infidelity, dozens of affairs, one-night stands, even relationships with porn stars.
Everyone said it was totally out of character. The revelations damaged his career terribly, and even Eldrick acknowledged how shocking his behavior had been.
I know I have bitterly disappointed all of you. I have made you question who I am and how I could have done the things I did. I'm embarrassed that I have put you in this position. For all that I have done, I am so sorry.
Well, Eldrick is, of course, Tiger Woods. A lot of people still wonder how a man so defined by control could spin so wildly out of control. And quite frankly, how so many people can so often act out of character like that. Well, we're joined by two researchers who have a new answer to that question. Rethinking Character and the Science of Vice and Virtue, that's today's talker on Radio Boston. Joining me now are the co-authors of the new book, Out of Character, Surprising Truths About the Liar, Cheat, Sinner, and Saint Lurking in All of Us. David DeSteno, he's Associate Professor of Psychology at Northeastern and Director of the Social Emotions Lab there. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having us on.
Well, your co-author is here as well, Pierre Carlo, but I understand you're going to go by Carlo.
Yep.
Okay. Val DeSolo, he's the Assistant Professor of Psychology at Claremont McKenna College. Carlo, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks. Thank you.
Okay, so we set up this conversation with the example of Tiger Woods acting so out of character. But the fundamental question here in that case is, what is character if not this static thing that we're told we're sort of born with or we learn how to achieve through life's lessons over time?
It's a good question. I think you hit the nail on the head. We have this idea that character is something that's set early in life by interactions with our parents. And, you know, if you look at the ancient motif that you have, you know, the devil on one side and the angel on the other, and you choose to listen to one and your life is set. But what we're finding is that just isn't the case. If you look at the psychological research, it shows again and again that people's behavior is just much more unpredictable than you would ever imagine. And what that makes us do, and I think what Carlo and I are arguing, is that we have to really reconsider what this notion of character is.
Okay, so your reconsideration, Carlo, is then it's not just good versus bad and a bright line between competing or conflicting impulses, but a more fluid state of being?
Absolutely, absolutely. So our claim is very much that character is flexible and it operates on a continuum. And the continuum is not flanked by good and bad, but by our short-term interests relative to our long-term interests. So we have, we use the metaphor of the ant and the grasshopper from Aesop's fable. The ant being the entity that's driving you to consider your long-term interests, and the grasshopper is the entity that's driving you to consider your short-term interests. And character unfolds as this tug of war between these two entities unfold.
Okay, so but the bottom line is that there's no right or wrong in your conception of character.
Well, it's not that there's no right or wrong. I mean, we have to. There's a different debate about what is virtue philosophically and what is virtue biologically. And so for us, you know, it doesn't make sense to assume that the mind has an evil mechanism. What purpose would that serve? You know, when you live in a social group, you always have a tension between what can I get now for me and what's good in the long term so people will want to interact with me. And finding the balance between those two is what it's all about.
Okay, so but even in this sort of new, more fluid state of character, you know, we're kind of popularly brought up to believe that that short-term actions or actions for short-term gain are still the little devil on one shoulder, that you know, you really should be looking to the long term in terms of how you comport yourself.
Right. So what we show in the book is that in many cases these short-term impulses can actually lead us to behave in ways that in general society finds desirable. So the short-term impulses are those that are compelling you to save your child, take a risk to save your family. It's the short-term impulses that are driving you to have spontaneous sex with your spouse, which most people consider a delightful thing. So it's not necessarily the case that short-term just leads to bad, and we show that with evidence from...
Sometimes you need to take the risk to go in today and demand the raise from your boss, or to be expedient in getting something done. And by accepting those short-term risks, they can position you better for the long term. But again, if you do it too often, that's when you'll get caught.
Okay, so this is your new definition of character. I want to be sure I understand it correctly. It's not fixed necessarily, and it's not good versus bad, but it's something that's a dynamic state within us that depends a lot on the situation that we're in?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So the context can bring out or differentially weight the processes that are involved in short-term versus long-term interest. So you could be in a situation that causes you to act on a short-term impulse, and you could be in a situation that causes you to act on a long-term impulse, and these vary wildly. And what we do in the lab is we put people in situations that emphasize one or the other, and we show how character changes as a function of that manipulation.
Okay, I want to talk about your experiments in just a bit, because they are absolutely fascinating. But I want to understand then, why is it that you say, or not you, but why is it that all of us, the rest of us, then say so frequently that we see people act out of character if it is this fluid thing? Why does it still seem like such a shock?
It's kind of an illusion, because what we argue is that a lot of what you do is determined by the situation you're in. And for most people, the situation they're in doesn't vary dramatically day to day. And so we tend to assume that people are behaving a certain way because it's in their essence. But really, it's because they're not being tempted. And when something happens in your environment that kind of gives your short-term side or your long-term side a little extra oomph than it normally has, you'll go with it. And because we as viewers see you do this and we assumed it was something about your essence, not the situation being stable, that's why it surprises us.
But it's most often put into sharp relief when it's someone who we thought was good who behaves badly.
Yeah, exactly. If you do one thing wrong, we assume suddenly you're a bad person. But the interesting thing is the converse isn't true. You know, we talk about lots of examples where you have someone who people view as not the best person. They do one thing good. Suddenly, this person is not a great person. And so logically, it's rather inconsistent.
Well, we are talking about rethinking character and the new science of vice and virtue. My guests are David DeStenno and Carlo Valdisolo. They are co-authors of the new book, Out of Character. Listeners, what do you make of what you hear on their new theory that character is a fluid thing? Have you ever behaved out of character, and what was going on then? Or maybe have you been surprised by someone you thought you knew well? Does this more fluid conception of character help explain that? And in the light of this new science, should we be rethinking the way we as individuals and society judge people on a daily basis, on a personal basis, maybe even on a legal basis? Give us a call with your thoughts at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Okay, David and Carlo, really the meat of your book here is all about these fascinating experiments that you've done that sort of tease out the fluidity, as you're saying, of our natural characters. You do them across the scale on basically the pairs of seven vices and virtues, but there's a couple that we'll have time for to focus on. And the first one are the sets of experiments you did around hypocrisy. So can you describe to us how you recreated the hypocritical behavior in the lab?
Sure. So essentially, we were defining hypocrisy as any time someone judges their own actions in a way that's strikingly different from the way they judge another person's identical actions. So we brought people into the lab, and we basically tricked them into committing a moral transgression. We created a paradigm that elicited a transgression from them. And then after they did that, we simply asked them, how moral was that thing that you did? In a separate condition, we had separate participants observe now a confederate, a research assistant working as sort of an actor in our lab, commit the exact same transgression. And now we ask participants, how fair was that person's action?
Okay, but the transgression is not some huge sweeping transgression.
Right,
we're talking
absolutely.
About like a tiny, tiny little task you're asking people
absolutely.
To do.
Absolutely. So we're constrained by the types of things we can get participants to do in the lab. So these are...
Which I think is actually more telling in how people were judging them later on. But so tell us specifically, what was the task?
So the task is... there are these two experimental protocols that need to be completed. One is very quick and very fun. It's like a photo hunt game, the type you see at the end of a bar. The other task is a very long and difficult 45 minutes of math and problem solving and spatial rotation tasks, things that people generally don't like to do.
So one takes like 5 minutes, the other takes 45 minutes.
Exactly.
And the subject, if I were the subject, I would have to choose. I've been told that I have to choose one.
Yeah, it's okay. Up to you to choose which of these you're going to complete and which of these is going to be completed by another participant.
I can tell you on an average day, I choose the short one.
Right. And we found that our participants overwhelmingly did the same thing.
90% of them. Right.
And the twist is that they can either assign these tasks in the fair way, that is through a coin flip, and just accept their fate. Or they can do it in the unfair way, which is assign arbitrarily. And what we see is that participants overwhelmingly say, forget the coin flip, forget what's fair. I'm just giving myself this easy task and that other person can deal with the long and difficult task.
So where does the hypocrisy come in then?
So that's our transgression. And what we find, as you said, is that people overwhelmingly, 90%, say, I'm going to take this task for myself without flipping the coin. So then we ask people, how fair was that? And they say, well, that was fine. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, I deserved the easy task. Maybe I was here first. Maybe I have other things to do. But in the condition where they're observing someone else make that same transgression, that is, assigning themselves the easy task just by personal preference, now they say, well, this is horribly unfair. This is immoral. You can't do this. And so there's the hypocrisy. There's the distinction between judging your own transgression as totally fine and someone else's identical transgression as immoral.
Okay, so that seems like a pretty straightforward example and maybe a very familiar sounding one of how small acts of hypocrisy happen every day. But what is your science telling you about why people do this?
Well, it's an interesting question because, you know, we're sitting here telling you we have these competing forces. And in the experiment Carlo just mentioned, everybody gave themselves the good task, so where's the good voice? And so, you know, we use this analogy of a scale tipping back and forth in the mind. And so we decided, well, we need to see if there is a good voice there, so to speak, a long-term voice saying don't cheat because ultimately you're going to get caught. So we repeated the experiment, but this time what we did was when people were reporting how fairly they acted, we gave them something psychologists call a cognitive load manipulation, which simply means that we're occupying your mind. So they're having to remember numbers while they're answering these questions. And what that simply does is it prevents you from engaging in rationalization. When you're counting backward from 7, it's hard to say, you know, to excuse yourself for doing things and create a story. And so what we found was in those instances, hypocrisy disappeared. When we occupy these people's working memory, so to speak, they said they acted as immorally as anybody else. And what this really tells us is that in that moment when you are deciding, did I act fairly, we all know by giving ourselves the good task and not flipping the coin that wasn't a fair thing to do. The pang of guilt is there. But if we give you an extra 30 seconds to think about it, you can rationalize it away and convince yourself that, you know, it was okay for me. And so you can see, depending upon just how long people have to make their decision, one force or the other is going to carry the day.
So timing is everything then?
Timing is part of everything, yeah.
Okay, so does that then argue for asking people to make decisions much more quickly than we usually would?
So perhaps in the context of this experiment, but as we said, sometimes those short-term impulses can send us the other direction, right? So you could imagine an experiment where your immediate gut response is going to drive you to an undesirable judgment or behavior. So it's not necessarily that your first instinct is the best.
Let's take a quick call here. We are talking about the new science of vice and virtue. My guests are David DeSteno, Associate Professor of Psychology at Northeastern, and Carlo Valdesolo, Assistant Professor of Psychology at Claremont McKenna College. They are co-authors of the new book, Out of Character. Ted is on the line from Sudbury. You're on the air, Ted.
Hi. The question I have is, for somebody who acted out of character, this is a person who was completely thought of as a trusted individual, and we just got a call that said that he has been put in jail because he sexually abused a family member, a young family member under the age of 10. I'm asking, how can somebody do this? This has thrown the entire group of family members into a tizzy. Hmm. What happens here?
Ted, thank you so much for your call. This is sadly probably not an infrequent thing that happens in families, that even someone that you feel like you may know better than anyone else in the world acts in a completely unexpected way.
So these cases of extreme transgressions are sort of different in kind from the types we talk about in the book. There's a distinction between normal psychological processes that govern vice and virtue as we define it in the book, and then pathology. And I think these types of extreme behaviors fall closer to pathology.
So those are distinctly different then?
Distinctly different in kind than the types of virtues and vices that we deal with in
the impulses and behaviors of most normal, regular people.
Exactly.
Well, let's take another call. Alvaro is calling from Sudbury. You're on the air, Alvaro.
Yeah, so my question is, what happened on the fringes when somebody is completely altruistic or somebody is completely evil and they don't want anything for themselves, doesn't matter about the short term, the long term, they just either want to cause good, extreme good, or extreme bad?
Well, it's an interesting question. You know, we have this view in our society that complete altruism is something that makes you a saint. But I think what Carlo and I are arguing in some ways is that it's much more of the view that Aristotle said, which is virtue is to be found between two vices, the vice of complete selfishness, but also the vice of complete selflessness. You can give too much, at least biologically. And so I think when you're at either end of the continuum, it's hard to stay there and lead a very optimal life.
Hmm. I want to talk about another set of experiments that you did around another impulse, and that is jealousy. So can you tell us a little bit of how you recreated jealousy in the lab?
Yeah, so this was actually the very first thing that I did as a research assistant in Dave's lab back in 2003, probably worse off for it. As I describe the experiment, you'll understand what I mean. So basically, what we thought would elicit jealousy in the lab was if I, as a Confederate, flirted with a participant, basically 2 or 3 minutes of me demonstrating interest in a participant. Then having another Confederate, another attractive female Confederate, enter the lab. And then I would essentially turn my attention away from the participant, ignore the participant, and now I'm interested in this Confederate.
Okay, so if I were the study subject, suddenly I'm thinking, wait, I thought you liked me.
Exactly right.
Okay.
Exactly right. So we thought that this would be the type of situation that would elicit jealousy, and we were exactly right. So people in this condition were reported significantly higher feelings of jealousy. We showed that it significantly influenced their implicit self-esteem. It made these people feel bad about themselves. And most interestingly, we showed that it caused these participants to actually aggress towards myself and also the attractive female rival.
Well, anyone who's been in a high school love triangle probably thinks this sounds really familiar. But
right.
But I'm just curious, what is it telling us about how context matters in terms of the expression of our character?
I think what it tells us is most people coming into this lab for this experiment would say, there's no way I'm going to be jealous of someone that I just met for 5 minutes.
The
potential is there, and that's exactly right. When in that moment when you are flirting with Carlo or somebody else, the potential is there for a true budding relationship. And if you don't protect it at the initial point, then you may never get to the long term. And so I think what it shows is that even in those few minutes, the impulses are there to start protecting and saying, this person is mine, don't poach them from me, and to aggress against it. And I would say 95% of our subjects would never have imagined they would be aggressing 10 minutes later.
So overall, in the last couple minutes we have here, I mean, you did experiments on many other impulses as well. And when you look at them in aggregate, really, what are we to make here if the potential for all this good and bad behavior is constantly at war within us? Well, you know, what's our big takeaway on how to control those impulses or what it matters in terms of how we judge each other?
So I think there are a couple takeaways. The most important for me is that knowing the processes that exist and knowing the processes that lead to vice and virtue allow us to either control it or allow us to selectively put ourselves in situations that bring out the characteristics that we want.
Could someone stand back and listen to this and think, You know, this actually to me sounds like the scientific justification for moral relativism.
No, I think that's not the case. I could see how people would think that. But what we're arguing is, well, first, we're not setting ourselves up as the arbiters of morality. I think that's for people to choose what virtue is for them. Our goal is to try and tell you how the system works. It's not all about self-control. You have to understand how the environment affects you. And by doing that, you can gain more control to kind of guide your life in the direction you want it to go. Most of the things we're talking about are controllable once you realize that it's not just willpower, it's also managing the situations that you're in.
Well, how important is it then to sort of control the impulses in the environment? Because I wonder, like, we're all in a similar environment. Say, you know, me and my colleagues, we're at work together every day. Things are kind of the same for all of us, but everyone reacts to things in different ways.
You do, but a lot of it is knowing that you're... So a lot of our experience, what we simply do is change what you're feeling. And because most people don't have deeply held moral philosophies, when they decide if something's okay, they do a gut check. And if you go into a situation and you're already feeling good, well, what that does is it makes you feel like more things are okay. And so sometimes it's simply just a matter of realizing how you're feeling within a situation and adjusting yourself.
So the good and bad is within all of us, but we can choose the good. We have the power to do so, right?
I think that's a nice...
I'm hoping that's the takeaway here.
Yeah.
Well, David DeSteno and Carla Valdesolo, co-authors of Out of Character, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
The authors will be doing a reading tonight at the Harvard Coop, by the way. It's starting at 7 p.m. You can read an excerpt from Out of Character. It is truly a wonderful and eye-opening book. That's at our website, radioboston.org. We will be back after a short break. And you will want to be with us because up next, sports with Bill Littlefield and a little taste of Cinco de Mayo. Stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.